You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The U. The new Miami. The new Miami. The new Miami. Surge, surge. The new Miami. The new Miami. The new Miami. Surge, surge.
It's a cane thing when we walk through. With the U ain't no bark, dude. Straight dog when we bring the fight. Ain't scared of no bright lights.
Welcome back to the Wide Right Podcast. This is Manny Navarro, your Miami Hurricanes beat writer at The Athletic. And today, as we record this around 10 a.m. Tuesday, November 24th, I am bringing on a new guest to the show, somebody who I've worked with for many years covering the Miami Hurricanes. He does a phenomenal job for Inside the U and 247 Sports. David Lake, how you doing, David?
Doing well, Manny. Good to be on with you. Thanksgiving week. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to eating some good food, but also looking forward to this conversation we're going to have.
Yes, you do a phenomenal job, you and Andrew Ivins, Inside the Smoke podcast. And I have so much respect for you because you and I have been covering this team now for, it feels like, two decades. When did you first start?
Yeah, so I started right out of college, right? So I went to the University of Miami. Mm-hmm. I graduated in 2007.
Okay.
And at that time, I worked under Christopher Stock, who was running the Scout website, Scout at the time, mm-hmm. Kane's time. And, you know, the two of us, along with Rudy Rodriguez Chomat, decided to start our own website, InsideTheU.com, you know, which 2007 was the first year of the Randy Shannon era. So it was kind of like a fresh start, mm-hmm. in a way, to start a new website. And from there, we've just kind of grown. We bounced. First, we were just a totally independent website. Then we were ESPN affiliated. Then we joined 24/7 when that network first started. So just kind of grown over the years and, you know, try and stay connected to the recruiting side of things and, of course, cover the team. But it's a fun job. Got no complaints. Definitely more fun times, more good times than not.
By the way, I think I called it Inside the Smoke. It's Through the Smoke, right?
Right. Through the Smoke podcast, InsideTheU.com.
So there you go. My bad. I called it Inside the Smoke, and I'm like, wait a minute. I just heard myself in my head. I played it back, and I'm like, I know I screwed that up.
No worries. You got it now.
So your colleague, Andrew Ivins, often joins me every Monday on the show that I do for Onside Radio. And we usually recap the Canes. We talk a whole lot of recruiting. And this week, obviously, there's no football game to review. There's not going to be another one after this weekend either. We're waiting until December 5th for the season to resume. And it feels like such a weird time because you've gone through an 8-game schedule. And mm-hmm. to have back-to-back bye weeks, obviously, amid this COVID pandemic, it just – you feel like, okay, this is a really weird pause. You have no idea how the team is going to come back looking in a couple of weeks, especially how many of those guys are out. We really don't have a clear-cut number of how many guys are sort of in quarantine or are out because of contact tracing. And so that's going to really affect them once they get back on the field, in my opinion. I guess to this point, David, what have you sort of surmised from this 7-1 start? And I'm of the opinion, like, I don't think the Canes need to play another game. If I'm Manny Diaz, I'm satisfied with what's gone on. We don't know if there's going to be more games sure. down the road, you know, other cancellations because other teams may have COVID issues as well. I mean, to this point, would you say the season has been a success?
Definitely a success in my opinion. You know, I think we always hold Miami to the highest standard, right? Because mm-hmm. we all remember when Miami essentially was what Alabama is now. So it is tough to judge a team against that standard. That's just what Miami as a program is always going to have to deal with. So is this team, you know, even close to that standard? No, of course not. But I think if we all took a step back and you know, take a look at what this Miami team has accomplished within the context of, you know, going back to even last year, Miami was a 6-7 team, lost to teams like FIU, Duke, Louisiana Tech. We all remember that. Manny Diaz made a ton of offseason changes, which I think all of those changes have hit. So Manny Diaz, in my opinion, deserves a ton of credit for those changes. You know, I think it's worth too noting that he made those changes during this pandemic year. And so there wasn't much, you know, quote unquote, normal time to kind of settle in and get those changes adapted during a typical year. So they've had to do all, they made a ton of changes, which they deserve credit for. They had to implement those changes on the fly, I think, because the offseason hasn't been normal. And yeah, the big picture, 7-1. I mean, look, at the end of the day, we can nitpick every little thing in a game, right? And certainly that's the case for, you know, 99% of the teams. I think in college football this year, we're seeing, you know, I think you could argue Alabama might be the best of the best. They're kind of in a category of their own. Then there's like 3 to 5 other teams. And then it's kind of, you know, 7 through 40, right? And Miami's probably in that 7 through 40. They're pulling out the close games, which they deserve credit for. They're finding a way to win, which I think is a trait. I think that does matter. And, you know, so in the big picture, 7-1, it's a big deal. I think it's the biggest deal in recruiting because at the end of the day, recruits don't care. Like, oh, Miami struggled in third down in this game, right? Miami allowed 40 points in a win over NC State. Recruits don't really look at that. Recruits just want to know, are you winning games? And right. So far, this team is winning games.
And if you're winning games, you're usually keeping your coaching staff around. You're not making changes. And I think that's been sort of the backdrop to what's happened the last 15 years of mediocrity, where you go through these bad seasons and you're making changes on your staff. Now, sometimes guys may leave for better jobs, but that has happened few and far between at Miami in the last 15 years. Usually when guys move on, it's because the head coach is fired or because the head coach is under tremendous pressure to make changes to that staff. And as you mentioned, Manny made all of those changes and they were the right changes. He had the wrong offensive coordinator. He needed a different offense. And I think that's really invigorated the recruiting base and South Florida in general. They're getting to watch an offense that they play in high school and they like playing in versus, you know, a slow plotting sort of traditional offense, which unfortunately is outdated. I prefer that offense. Whenever I'm playing video games and it's been years, I love running the football three yards in a cloud of dust and ball control. Nowadays it's hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. And I think Rhett Lashley, look, he's a very good play caller. I think that's one thing you can say about him. A lot of the times he has the defense out of sync, and a lot of Miami's touchdowns have been because they've completely fooled the other team with whatever they've called, at least their big plays. That said, when you look at this offense, where do you still see areas where, okay, they need to get a lot better here?
Yeah, so I think it ties into your point in terms of why Miami needed to make the switch from a pro-style offense to this spread. Because, you know, as you know, you would agree with this, a pro-style offense can work if you have the personnel, right? But Miami has to play to its personnel. And, you know, in recent years, they've had better talent at the skill positions than on the offensive line for the most part. And, you know, that's once again the case this year. I kind of look at this offense and I wish the run blocking was a little more impactful. To me, honestly, I don't have very many issues with the job they're doing in pass protection. I think Derek King, for the most part, has a clean pocket in most of these games. Against Virginia Tech, it wasn't good enough. But as we know, they were dealing with COVID issues going up going into that game. And I think it was different in practice, right? And there was also a new guy inserted into the lineup. So maybe that caused some continuity issues with the pass protection in that game. But my biggest issue is the run blocking, which you know, really, I've never really seen that before. This is kind of the second straight year where you could argue. Now, last year, the pass protection wasn't good at all either. But I would argue the pass protection was still slightly better than the run blocking last year, too. And really, you don't see that because typically run blocking just comes more naturally to an offensive line, right? Because mm-hmm. you're just going forward. You are dictating terms when you're run blocking. So is that a strength and conditioning issue? Is that a size issue? I think you and I would both agree that this offensive line kind of is like a finesse group. It's yeah. not like the biggest, strongest line that's going to impose its will on you in the run game. So would another year in the strength program improve that? Probably. I think the bottom line is it just comes down to recruiting. You got to recruit better offensive linemen. I think they are doing that. But you know, the offensive line is a developmental position and it takes time. So they have some talented freshmen on the roster right now that I think will improve things in the future. I like the offensive line recruiting class they have committed right now. But again, it takes 2-3 years to have those guys ready to play in a game. So, I guess to answer your question, to me, it's run blocking.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. And that you can see when you look at the numbers, how far they've dropped off. Last year, I think they were 120th in rushing in terms of yards per game. I don't know where they were exactly in yards per rush, but it wasn't good. And certainly, I would say another area where there's been somewhat of a drop off has been the receiver position. And although Mike Harley has played really well this year and really started to turn a corner, I think that's still a position where you're not maybe getting as much explosiveness. Now these last couple of games, Mark Pope has started to play better. D. Wiggins has had a touchdown catch. I mean, I think a lot of this is De'Eric King making great throws and these guys finally hanging on to the ball. But I still feel like that's an area where if you line up Miami in a college football playoff game or a bowl game and you're playing against elite competition, I'm not so confident that those dudes win their matchups against those cornerbacks, those high caliber cornerbacks that would be covering them. And so I think they've addressed that in recruiting as well. I just think now they've got a freshman class that's so young and it's hard, especially not having a spring football season. I think that's really what hurt the development of some of those guys like Keyshawn Smith and some of the other freshmen that are on this roster.
Yeah, I agree. The passing game is definitely propped up by De'Eric King. I think if he had a number one receiver, Miami's offense would be so much better. Like even if Miami had like a KJ Osborne, right? Mm-hmm. I think you would see this offense, the passing attack be so much more explosive. So, you know, I think it's a group, again, to me, it's a finesse group, which makes going to the spread offense the right move for the personnel Miami has on offense. I think those guys do have speed, but do they have the ability to fend off defenders and come down with those 50-50 catches we've seen? That's just not in their skill set, right? So I think they are improving in that regard as the season progresses, which is good to see. There are limitations that they do drop too many catchable passes from mm-hmm. time to time. But like you said, they are improving. Can they reach another level by the end of the year? You know, I think if they do and they continue to play more games, you would have to think Miami's going to finish the season strong. College football nowadays, it's interesting. Like, you know, the cliche is you got to win the line of scrimmage. It's trending with each year that you can judge a football team by how much more dominant are their receivers, their skill players on the outside compared mm-hmm. to the secondary they're facing. Just because football in general is trending to a passing game. And, you know, this group of receivers isn't a dominant group necessarily. They do have speed. They can be dangerous if they have a crease, but can they take over a game? We haven't seen that yet.
No. Defensively, I know that Blake Baker's taken a lot of criticism, and it feels like every year, right, there's one coordinator who's always on the bad side of fans, right? I mean, last year was obviously Dan Enos in the offense because they couldn't score enough points. This year, a guy like Blake Baker is taking the heat because of, you know, shootout-type games that they've had that they've still managed to win, by the way. But the fact that they've given up quite a bit of yards here and quite a bit of points there, I look at the job that he's done, and I'm not as much of a critic of Blake Baker. I think it's more a personnel issue for the Hurricanes in some regards. Yeah. I feel like the cornerback position, you're not getting elite play from either DJ Ivy or Al Blades. I think Tecori Couch has started to play a lot better. But you don't have those elite press corners like the Miami Dolphins do, right, with Xavien Howard and Byron Jones and those guys. You have guys that can do an okay job in coverage, but they're not elite. And I think the other aspect is the linebacker position. You just don't have – when you lose Shaq Quarterman, Michael Pinckney, I know there were a lot of critics of those, both of those guys saying, oh, they're overrated or they're not as good as former Miami linebackers. While that was true, they still were very good in by the most measures of analytics and production. And so to me, that's where I see the drop off. I guess I'm asking you the Blake Baker question. What do you, when you look at this defense, what do you see as far as the reasons for why they've maybe taken a slight step back?
I'm with you. I have a heart, like I get it when you're just going by the eye test, right? Like this Miami defense isn't as salty as it normally has been during the Manny Diaz era. And you know, you watch and this defense, you know, in the back seven, they do play off at times. Right. Mm-hmm. But I think that speaks to two things. You touched on it with the personnel. I kind of think this defense to me, I think the defensive line is very good. I think the defensive line is a top 10, top 15 defensive line in the country. And they cover up a lot of the issues that you highlighted in the back seven. And so if when there's stretches in the game or when there are games where the defensive line doesn't necessarily bring it, I think those issues get exposed. I think too, you have to look at modern college football and how offenses are exploding in general this year. You look around the country and look at how Miami's defensive stats compare to other teams like Alabama, Georgia. You know, those teams do have better personnel than Miami. And the, you know, they do have better stats, but it's slightly better stats than Miami. So, you know, I think Blake Baker is doing a fine job with what he has to work with. But again, this to me, I'm a big recruiting guy, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a believer in recruiting. So players matter. You gotta improve your defense by landing stud players on the recruiting trail. You know, I think that's where things, you know, the criticism can begin and end. And I think this recruiting class they have coming in, if guys stay committed, they definitely upgrade the talent at some places. Other places, there's still concerns like corner. The situation there isn't great right now. But yeah, I mean, in terms of criticizing Blake Baker, I get it too. Like, that's just what we do in college football. Those guys get paid. The players do not get paid. So you have to criticize the coaches. And but again, I think it's probably a little unfair to want to fire Blake Baker, because honestly, I think he's doing a fairly good job with what he has to work with.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I agree. And, you know, Miami fans, it's just the fan base, unfortunately. And they're critical of me, by the way, anytime I'm negative or whenever we make sort of hard looks at certain positions or players, they jump down your throat. Yet they're turning around and doing the same thing on social media and Facebook and Twitter, whatever, ripping people. So people listening to this, for those of you that I've offended here in the last couple of weeks, I apologize. I didn't mean to be too hard on your team, even though you get to be hard on your team. David, I appreciate you sort of breaking down the roster with me. It's always fun to get somebody else who looks at this roster constantly and covers this team on a daily basis the way that you do, to sort of share thoughts on what you're seeing and to kind of contrast, you know, go back and forth on it. But recruiting is obviously, this is an important time of year. Signing day is less than a month away. And I just looked at the commitment list, and they haven't had a commitment since August 27th, rather. I guess Chase Smith was the last guy.
Right.
And they're still missing a quarterback. They're still missing a cornerback, as you brought up. They don't really have that on the roster here. Are you worried at all about this recruiting class not filling those two needs? Do you think ultimately, like I do, that it's going to end up being addressed in the transfer portal? And that's just something we have to accept nowadays, that there's going to be certain positions that coaches wait to address through the transfer portal.
Yeah, I do think so. The transfer portal is definitely going to be a new avenue to acquire talent, because it is widely expected that the NCAA is going to grant a one-time free transfer rule for anyone in the country, right? Mm-hmm. So that's going to flood the transfer market with a lot more quality players than we've ever seen before. I still think you want to build your roster through high school recruiting, right? But if you can't get that done, and there are reasons why, I think it's, you know, somewhat valid reasons, particularly at quarterback, why Miami hasn't filled that need yet. And, you know, since March, it's because of there being a recruiting dead period. You know, Miami, the vast majority of this class, so Miami has 20 or 21 players committed. I think 17, 18, 19 of those guys are from South Florida. Mm-hmm. So they've been able to keep those guys home. You know, those guys haven't been able to go out and visit other schools because the NCAA will not allow it, in terms of like getting FaceTime with head coaches. They can go visit schools on their own dime, but they can't be around coaches if they do that. So the one position where that has impacted Miami is at quarterback, because there just aren't very many, there's really no Power 5 level quarterbacks inside the state of Florida this year. So that means Miami has to go out of state and try and find a quarterback. Well, they weren't able to get any quarterbacks on campus before the COVID-19 pandemic hit. And also, in addition to that, you know, Rhett Lashley was a new hire. So he was trying to still establish relationships with guys that might be interested in Miami. And so, again, it's just a tough situation. Now, a lot of programs are dealing with this problem, too, just at other positions. For Miami, it's happening at quarterback. So right now they're zeroing in on USC commit Jake Garcia, who is probably the only big time quarterback out there that has actually visited Miami. Mm-hmm. Now he was recruited under Dan Enos. But you know, he is talking behind the scenes with Manny Diaz, Rhett Lashley. That line of communication is still happening. But Miami is running out of runway in terms of trying to flip Jake Garcia. He's still committed to USC. He's originally from Southern California. He's currently playing his high school football in Georgia just to get a senior season in. So Miami's still holding out hope that they can pull off that flip. I think if they do get that done, you know, regardless of what happens at corner, to be honest, if they just simply flip Jake Garcia, this is probably one of the best recruiting classes I've ever seen Miami pull since 2007. I think, you know, it would be a huge domino if Miami was to pull Jake Garcia. They would widely have a top 10 recruiting class. And, you know, quarterback, we're seeing it this year play out in real time. Quarterback is the most important position in sports. Quarterback recruiting is the most important position in recruiting. You have to always stack talent, always stack competition at that position to ensure that you have a difference maker there. And landing a guy like Jake Garcia, I don't know if he's better than Tyler Van Dyke, but it would certainly raise the level of competition between him and Tyler Van Dyke. May the best man win in the future for the future starting job. And that's where you want your quarterback room to be. So to answer your question, yes, it is concerning to me that quarterback in particular has not been addressed, but I think you are right that even if they don't sign a guy, they're going to address it in the transfer portal, both at quarterback and cornerback.
When I had Andrew Ivins on my show last night over at Onside Radio, Manny Navarro on the Miami Insiders, and I asked him, you know, who do you think they look at in the transfer portal? Because the reality is there's not a lot of great quarterbacks necessarily available or looking. But he mentioned Malik Willis, the quarterback from Liberty, who is the former Auburn quarterback, as somebody that might be the perfect candidate because of his dual threat ability. He's thrown 17 touchdowns, 4 picks, 1,800 yards, and, you know, he's had a good season. I think he's also, what does he run for? Let me look at his numbers here real quick. 744 yards and 9 touchdowns. I guess he would be sort of another version of De'Aaron King in a lot of ways, but we don't know. We're not, this isn't like a tampering type podcast. We're not sitting here saying that's going to happen, but.
And also we don't know what De'Aaron King's going to do. Right. So I think let's say Miami doesn't sign a quarterback and De'Aaron King decides to, you know, test the NFL draft. Right. Mm-hmm. Then I think Miami has to sign 2 transfer guys, because I think you got to get a young guy that understands I'm going to be developed. And then you got to get an instant impact graduate transfer, because me personally, I think like I like Tyler Van Dyke, but I think he needs another year of seasoning at the college level before he's ready to be Miami's full-time starter. That's just my opinion.
Right. You're not lighting him up game 1.
So yeah, Alabama. Right. That's kind of what it boils down to for me. Like, I like him long-term. And in general, too, I'm kind of just instituting my own rule of, you know, unless you're a Trevor Lawrence, a can't-miss quarterback, I don't want any more freshmen or redshirt freshmen starting at Miami, because I think that's one of the issues, in my opinion, that Miami's run into in the last 15 years. They're always turning the program over to freshmen or redshirt freshmen that, you know, have talent but aren't ready to lead, and then you get in this cycle of, oh, How do you recruit a high level quarterback when you're already starting a freshman or true freshman? So that's just one of my rants. But go ahead. Sorry.
No. Well, listen. You did an article on all the quarterback candidates, and obviously you threw this kid out of USC, or the commitment to USC, Jake Garcia first, and then you had Jalen Milroe, who they obviously flirted with. He's committed to Alabama now. You mentioned some other names here. Yeah. Kadon Salter, I guess, who's committed to Tennessee. But all, realistically, I think one thing we have to note is that all of these guys, it's unlikely at this point that Miami's going to flip them. Correct. Right. I mean, it's so late.
It's just hard because they can't visit. They cannot visit. So if you can't get these guys on campus, you can't expect to flip them. Now, those guys you named, besides Jake Garcia, I listed them because, you know, Jalen Milroe committed to Alabama. Last year, Alabama signed the number one quarterback in the country, Bryce Young, who's probably going to be the starter when Mac Jones goes on to the NFL this year. So is Jalen Milroe going to be patient and want to wait, you know, behind? I mean, Bryce Young's still going to be a true freshman technically because it's a free year of eligibility. So they're going to be the same age. Caden Salter, I've seen him in person. He was at a Miami 7-on-7 back in January, February. He's a stud. He's really good. I listed him because Tennessee's having a terrible year, and their offense, quite frankly, looks bad too. Just the system they run. So would a quarterback want to do that? But again, it's a big leap of faith for any of these quarterbacks to flip to Miami. So realistically, yeah, it's very hard to project that.
Yeah. And all right. So look, we've talked about what they need, and obviously cornerback is another position of need. And you and Andrew do a good job of constantly discussing and going back and forth on like potential options and okay, who's available, et cetera. But are the guys they got committed, and you've watched some of these guys in person. I have too. I went to the sort of the last quote unquote combine. I call them combines. In March up at North Broward Prep. So I got to see a lot of these guys win some one-on-one battles. Leonard Taylor to me was a phenomenal pickup. I know five-star kid and whatever, number one in his position. I looked at him and I said, man, this is a guy who's going to be just a stud at Miami. He's really going to be a difference maker. James Williams as well, the other five-star, both of those guys. I think those are like as much of a can't-miss prospect as we've seen committed to Miami in a long time.
Yeah,
I think because Miami is 7-1 and they've had this good season to date, we have not heard any rumors about potential defections, right? I think this is as confident as we can be about Miami holding on the five-star recruits as it's been in a while, correct?
Agreed, yeah. And it's partly the 7-1 start, which is the biggest part. But also, too, we got to keep it real and mention that, you know, the dead period with with recruits not being able to go, you know, take a – you know, they tell you, oh, I'm just going to visit, but still, if they get on Georgia's campus or Alabama's campus, you never know what can happen, right? So they
those briefcases come out, right?
Yeah, I mean, you never know what could happen on those visits. So, you know, they can't go make those trips. So, yeah, that's definitely helping Miami too. But the bottom line to me, because going 7-1 is the biggest reason why they're sticking, because these guys already know, like, okay, I can flip at any time to Georgia and Alabama if they want and be fine. So, but yes, this is why winning matters. And this is why, you know, recruiting is a reflection in a lot of ways of your on-field success. So this is the challenge for Miami because, and Manny Diaz, how do you sustain this next year? Because if you sustain this next year, the recruiting success is going to be sustained as well. But yeah, Leonard Taylor, man, he is probably the best defensive lineman I've seen from South Florida. And that so before Leonard, I would have said Corey Leggett.
Leggett. So yeah, from Pioneer High.
You've seen him, right?
Yeah.
He was a freak in high school. And he was the same class as Marcus Forston, that 08 class, who I think was rated higher in the rankings. But if you went out and watched them play their senior years, like Corey was a monster and the better player that year. And it played out that way with their careers. Leonard, in my opinion, is better than Corey, who went on to be a first round pick. He played at Illinois. So
he wanted to come to Miami. I was at Hialeah that day, and I can tell you that
there was factors at play, right?
Yes, yes,
yeah. Yeah. But yeah, Leonard is that type of guy, athletic defensive tackle that can wreck a game. And those guys, honestly, might be the rarest players in the country. Like, those guys don't grow on trees. So the fact that Miami's getting that type of guy is a big deal.
It's a great point about Leonard Taylor. I really was impressed with him. The guy that I, you know, and I look at James Williams, I think a lot of people feel the same way, at least a lot of the scouts and people who study this stuff, that he's got such a big body that if you turn him into a linebacker, he would still be so elite at his position just because of his size and athleticism. But it seems to be something that he's fought against. You know, he wants to play safety at the next level. When you look at him, do you think Miami coaches at one point will be able to convince him, hey, you need to play in the box, dude?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that is the best case scenario for his career. In a lot of ways, it reminds me back in the day of Ray Armstrong, who kind of a similar body type. You know, he had to really work at staying lean enough to play safety. But if he just allowed himself to grow into a linebacker, he would have panned out at Miami, in my opinion. And you know, that talent is showing, like, he's still hanging around in the NFL a little bit these days. So with James, yeah, I mean, you know, I would assume he will get a chance to show what he can do at safety and, you know, see how it goes on the practice field. I think then the next move is, okay, James, let's see how it goes at striker and see how that goes. Maybe he can play at striker. I don't know. But then if striker doesn't work, yeah, he's going to be a phenomenal linebacker. The bottom line with him, he's a five-star athlete, right? So wherever he fits the best, wherever he can get on the field, he's going to make plays. But yeah, I would say, judging from what I've seen over the years, it would be hard to expect him to stick at safety at the college level and be an impact player. I think he can make the biggest impact in the front seven. So maybe striker is a fair compromise for him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in terms of being a pure deep coverage safety, I'm not sure about that.
Now, Manny Diaz has been at this recruiting thing for a while, and we can talk more about the guys in this 21 signing class. But to me, I almost would prefer to sort of look ahead to a year from now and development and some of the young guys that they have recruited here in the last year or two. At its best, okay, with the talent on board that you already have, and I know they still got to address the quarterback position. We don't know what's going to happen with that. So it's a really hard question to answer. But just based on the talent that they got, is Miami a better football team a year from now? Or do they take a step back because of some of the factors of transfers leaving, guys like a Jalen Phillips, guys like De'Aaron King, so Jared Williams? Yeah.
Are we assuming De'Aaron King's leaving? Are we assuming Jalen Phillips is leaving?
I think it's safe to assume that those guys who have played really well are going to want to make the leap. And of course, De'Aaron's already – he's part of that Senior Bowl, isn't he? I mean, he's already got that Senior Bowl invite, and I think
– I don't think he's officially accepted it. Quincy Roche has.
Okay.
So, yeah, Quincy's not coming back. But, yeah, if those – like, to me, if De'Aaron King goes, yeah, it's – you know, we'll see what they can add in the transfer portal. But on paper, no, it's not going to be as good. Right. But yeah, pending whatever they add in the transfer portal. Jalen Phillips, also going to be a tremendous loss. But I think in general, you would feel decent about the way they have been able to develop defensive linemen in recent years, right? So, I mean, I often have to remind myself that this team was supposed to have Greg Rousseau on it, right? And you know, which is crazy to think about, like, how good would this D-line be if he was playing? But yeah, to me, honestly, the key is De'Aaron King. And you could argue he is the biggest recruit that Manny Diaz needs to sign for this year. Because I think if they convince De'Aaron King to come back, it would fend off any, you know, potential Rhett Lashley stuff that might happen. Who knows? Mm-hmm. It would probably make Jalen Phillips have to really consider, okay, do I want to maybe come back for a fun year at Miami? You know, it would convince a lot of guys to come back and rally around. You've seen the impact De'Aaron King's had on this team. Like, guys rally around him. He's magnetic. He's a great leader, great player too. So if Manny can convince him to come back, I think this – this program has a chance to get things rolling downhill in a good way. But yes, to your point, if he does leave, it's a lot of holes. And you know, what I was saying earlier, recruiting is a reflection of how things are going on the field. So if Derek King leaves, the quarterback they bring in or they go with doesn't get the job done, and Miami goes 8-4, 7-5, which is probably fair expectations. I mean, we'll see who they would add. But if they go 8-4, 7-5, your recruiting class isn't likely going to be good enough. So,
well, that's why I kind of geared the question towards, you know, maybe the classes that have come in under Manny, the 2019 kids, the 2020 kids, the guys that have just come in here in the last couple of years, because those are the guys that ultimately you say, can they grow into a better team, you know, with what they recruited? And we know attrition always happens. There's always guys who are going to want to get into the transfer portal and leave, but I'm just curious, based on some of the young players, and I guess it's hard. It's a hard question to answer because a lot of these guys have not played. They have not, they really not even really touched the field outside of special teams in some circumstances. But I guess just from a recruiting standpoint, you know, this last class was 16th in the country. The one in 2019 was, let's see here, what did it rank?
It was low.
27th. It was it wasn't a very good one. It's still, I guess my point is, does it feel at all as though next year is still a very much a transitional year? Like, you can't go into the season feeling like, okay, these guys are ready to deliver. It's still a lot of unknown.
Correct. Yes, especially if Derek King does not come back.
Right.
You know, from what I've studied, really the standard is like the bare minimum to be able to compete for championships, whether that's conference championships or national championships, from a recruiting perspective, is a program has to stack, in general, top 15 classes on top of each other for a 3 to 5 year stretch. Like, that's kind of what it has to do. And within that, you got to hit on a quarterback. So, you know, I think it's unfair to really judge the 2019 class. That's a kind of a transition year. Yes, I understand Manny Diaz was the D coordinator, but still transition year. I do like their 2020 class. I think that class, you know, Avante Williams, hopefully he can get healthy. I think he's a difference maker at safety. I'll say this. I think Manny has done a good job addressing most positions. I think offensive line, he's improving the talent there with recruiting. I like what they're doing on the defensive line. Linebacker, you know, we'll see. I think they do have talent, but it's young. And is it going to be ready next year? I don't know. Corner needs to get better. Let's be real. Running back, I think's been really good. You know, we're seeing those freshmen flash this year. And receiver, I like what they're doing too. I think the group they have, you know, outside of the five stars that you mentioned for this 2021 class, James Williams and Leonard Taylor, to me, the other story is the pass catchers in that class. I think Romello Brinson, Breshard Smith, Jacoby George, Malik Curtis are all dynamic players. I think you also have to include Elijah Arroyo, the tight end commit from Texas. I think he's honestly one of the best tight ends in the country. In terms of athleticism. So they are upgrading those spots. But again, you know, this subject keeps coming up because it's so important. Quarterback, what's it look like at quarterback? And right now it's just, we got to be real. It's a big question mark. And quarterback, as we are seeing now, like, how many games has Derek King alone, in your opinion, won this year for Miami? I think it's like 2 or 3. Just him being on the team, you know, if Jaren Williams is the quarterback of this team, they're not even close to 7-1, right? They're somewhere like 4-4.
I think that's probably more accurate. 4-4, 5-3. I think certainly NC State game was won by D'Eric. I think hands down, you look at that individual performance and you say without D'Eric, they don't win that game. And you could certainly argue Virginia Tech, because he led them on those two scoring drives late to take over. So I think the last two games alone, D'Eric wins for you, especially on the road. It's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, you and I study this a ton. You write a ton of stories. I write less. which is a good thing for me at The Athletic. They give you a little bit more flexibility, but you guys work so hard on studying all this stuff. And I think you guys do an excellent job. And to me, it's always good to sort of, hey, what do you think? What do you see? Cause we've been around this for so long. I mean, you mentioned your first press conference being Randy Shannon's press conference. And I think back to how, you know, that whole butt buddies comment.
Butt buddy, yeah.
Javaris, James.
Welcome to the Randy Shannon era.
Right. That was one of his first quotes from this first press conference. And I think, man, ever since butt buddies, things have just been so volatile, right? I mean, it's.
Yeah, and it's the same issues, honestly. Like, you know, they've had decent quarterbacks, but no real game changers, right? And like I've said, it's okay, who's the next freshman quarterback, right? And it's just kind of like, yeah, I mean, unless it's like an obvious freshman quarterback that's a stud, like, what are you getting yourself into? Mm-hmm. And then it's just inconsistent. Like, they are not stacking top 15 recruiting classes year after year after year. Mm-mm. And so then the fan base watches, you know, on the field, the product. And yeah, that's why, like, it, you know.
Alonzo Highsmith, when I ran into him last year at the, what do they call that summer event where all the juniors are there?
Paradise Camp.
Paradise Camp. Yeah. See, I already forgot because we didn't have one this past year.
Correct.
The last time I sat there and I talked with him for a little while, he said it's the quarterback position. That's really the difference. Because if you do look at it, there's a lot of other positions you can say you've had comparable talent to what you've had in the past. Maybe not the same elite. Right. Comparable talent, but certainly good enough to win if you had a good quarterback. Agreed. And I think that's what we're seeing this year. They're good enough to win because they have a good quarterback.
Correct. Quarterback. And that's becoming amplified every year in this modern college football. I mean, the rules give quarterbacks and offenses so many more advantages than defenses. Mm-hmm. And to that point, your quarterback point, Miami now has a quarterback that can make plays with his legs and his arm, right? Mm-hmm. So that's another factor why De'Aaron King has been, you know, such a difference maker for this Miami team. So, you know, and I will say this, Manny Diaz is a defensive coach, but he fully understands this. Like, he fully embraces that, yeah, quarterback is what matters. He knows this.
Do you think Miami has the right head coach now? I was very apprehensive about Manny because he didn't have the head coaching experience. And I thought his first major hire, Dan Enos, was obviously a flop. It just didn't work out. From a personnel perspective in terms of how he interacted with that personnel. And then the execution. I feel though that he's really redeemed himself and he's shown us something this year in the sense of he can be a successful head coach. Now, can he recruit the quarterback and recruit other positions that he needs?
100%. I think Miami fans should want, now it all comes down to results, right? Mm-hmm. But Miami fans should want Manny Diaz to be the guy. To me, he kind of embodies what Miami fans should want in their head coach. He understands the local scene. He understands the history of the program. He's willing to play the schemes on offense and defense that will be exciting to the fan base. And he's also just a very intelligent guy. Like he understands that he needs to represent the school and have a dialogue with the fan base through the media, all that stuff. He gets it all. And honestly, he's a good leader, I think, with his team. I think his team plays hard for him, which matters at the college level. But yeah, to your point, it all boils down to recruiting. Who are you going to pull? What difference maker at quarterback are you going to pull? And, you know, can you keep stacking the good enough talent on offense and defense around that quarterback to keep it going? So, yeah, I mean, I think Manny Diaz understands like what it is going to take, but actually doing it, it's another deal. And we'll see. So far, I agree. Like, I'm highly encouraged by the way he has drastically changed the trajectory of the program just after 1 year, right? Mm-hmm. If you asked me this question last year at this time,
you weren't sold on him.
No, how could you be, you know?
No.
You,
mm-hmm.
Like, beyond the FIU loss, like, that Georgia Tech loss was also an abomination. Like, that Georgia Tech team, you had no business losing to that Georgia Tech team. So he – and look, this is what makes Manny Diaz, in my opinion, a potentially good coach. He is willing to be introspective and address and be honest about, okay, these are the issues. I need to fix these. We've seen in the past, like, Al Golden was stubborn.
Right.
He would not do what it takes.
Anthony Chiccolo was going to be a defensive tackle come hell or high water with Al Golden.
If Al Golden had changed his defensive philosophy, he could have won a lot of games, right?
Right.
So, you know, having a head coach that is adaptable and understands how to make changes, I think that's big in the modern era. And you know, Manny Diaz shows those traits now. But again, results are what matter, and you got to win. So we'll see if he. To me, the question is, yeah, this season's nice, 7-1, and maybe this is unfair by my part because I'm looking ahead. Mm-hmm. But to me, the question with this Miami program right now is, how do you sustain this success? How do you keep it going? Because right. We've always seen these one-year pop-ups, you know? But how do you keep this going? And to me, that starts with De'Aaron King. Find a way to keep the guy in your program. And if you can't, maybe you hit on another transfer quarterback. But to me, it starts with De'Aaron King.
Now, someone I know who had a conversation with Manny Diaz recently and is very well tapped into things going on at Miami told me that there is some optimism amongst the coaches that they think De'Aaron might consider staying, whereas it's not a foregone conclusion, which I think Miami fans with good reason would say, well, what else does he have to prove? There's certainly opportunities in the NFL for him to come on and be sort of a specialist, especially because of his athleticism and speed. He could come in, play wide receiver, running back, and then be a part of a couple of packages and so forth and play. But I think for the most part, you look at De'Aaron and you say, well, how does he get drafted high as a pure quarterback with how deep this draft class is? So
I think it comes down to, right, how much is De'Aaron King, like, how sold is he on, I have to be a quarterback in the NFL? Mm-hmm. So if he is dead set on playing quarterback in the NFL, then I think he needs to come back and put another year of film on tape, playing against Power 5 competition. But if he understands, you know, hey, my ceiling in the NFL at quarterback, probably not that high, he can certainly be a slash type player, right? Which, you know, the NFL is definitely becoming more open to these days. But yeah, I do think, like, right now, I think De'Aaron King would get drafted somewhere between the 5th through 7th rounds, just my opinion. I think if he came back and had another solid year, successful year playing quarterback at the college level, I think he could see a stock bump up to the 3rd or 4th rounds. But is he ever going to be a first round quarterback? I would bet against that.
He would need to have a Kyler Murray type season. He would have to beat teams like Alabama and Ohio State and prove to the league that, hey, it's not just against the ACC, but against the best teams. And the only way you play the best teams, aside from the opener against Alabama, is by getting to the college football playoff or getting to the ACC championship game and playing Clemson. Then that's when you can sort of put that stuff on tape that you need to put on tape. But I from my conversations with people around De'Aaron back before the season started, I don't think he's necessarily hell-bent on playing quarterback. I think that's really, really what he wants.
Right.
But I certainly think, again, my conversations with his people, I think there is an understanding of, well, I may just have to go to the NFL and play receiver or running back. And if that's the case, then that's the case. And I think Miami can certainly try to sell him on coming back and giving them another year. But it's going to be interesting. All of this stuff, it's like so much of this is just unknown. We're like juggling.
It's crazy. Balls in the air. Yeah. The Manny Diaz era, it could go many different ways for all these reasons. There's so many variables, and you know, it all came together in 2020, in terms of he made all the right offseason moves, right? Mm-hmm. Can he do it again in 2021? We'll see, you know. And if he does, like I said, I think he's going to get it rolling downhill, and I think he'll be the head coach at Miami for a long time.
I hope you're right. I'd like to see some consistency, and I'd like to see this program get back to a level where they should be, because frankly, they've continued to produce so much talent where there's enough guys playing in the league that came out of Miami, and certainly enough guys that came out of South Florida in the NFL that you say, with the right head coach, the right quarterback, this can be a championship winning program. It's a very difficult job because of so many different factors, you know, other schools in the SEC, you have Clemson, who's a power now in the conference. Like there's a lot to beat. And that's why I think Manny Diaz has the toughest job in South Florida of all the coaching jobs. I think being the head coach at the University of Miami is the toughest by far.
And the expectations are always, you know, they are what they are, which doesn't make it easy either. But yeah, if he does maximize, like the thing that makes this job interesting is because the potential is as high as any job in the country. Mm-hmm. Now, how realistic is that? That's another conversation, right?
Right.
But I do think, can Manny Diaz get Miami to a point where it's consistently winning 10 games a year? I think that's a fair expectation. Are we ever going to see the Miami Hurricanes of the 80s, early 90s, you know, turn of the century, 2000s? I don't know. We'll see. But I think it's fair to say, why can't Miami win 10 games every year? I think that's fair.
I think with the right quarterback,
yeah,
you get the results that you see this year, which is they find a way to beat teams in the conference that aren't as good as they are.
Correct.
I think without that quarterback, it's 50-50 whether they win those games.
100%. Yeah. They're always going to have, and we talked about the defense, like if this defense is not a perfect defense, but you compare this defense to other defenses in the ACC, Miami still has more speed than most of these other defenses. They still have more playmakers than most of these defenses. So, you know, they're going to be able to put a defense on the field that's good enough always. And just with their aggressive scheme, they're going to always create issues for opposing offenses, most of these opposing offenses in the ACC. The question is your quarterback play good enough, competent enough to score more than 20 points? Because last year, when Miami was losing, they weren't scoring more than 20 points, which is nothing for modern college football.
But David, I feel like even in certain positions, if you are able to keep a Patrick Surtain home, okay?
Yeah.
Or Josh Jobe, whoever, you know, there's so many guys around the country that have come out of South Florida. If a Nick Bosa stays home, if some of these guys are like, hey, Miami's winning 10 games every single year, I want to go there and push them over the top to win a championship.
Yes.
And you don't go through 6-7, 7-6, 8-5 so many times. Those guys probably do stay home and you're 100%. Not in this. But it's like at some point along the way, it's like they fell off that elite wagon. And it's so hard just to get back up in that seat where you were at. And
you know who we're seeing? I think we're seeing kind of go through this too. And I'm not saying Miami's out of this yet. I need to see 2 or 3 years of this level. But Florida State is in the same spiral right now, right?
And they may not ever get out of it. They don't have sunny South Florida as the recruiting base, and they don't have sunny South Florida as an attraction base.
Right. But, yeah, to your point, like if Miami's getting to the – and, you know, I think you can look at Clemson kind of as a way that Miami can potentially build its program. Like Clemson – doesn't recruit in terms of recruiting class rankings. They don't recruit at the same level as Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, but they do recruit in that top 15 range. And of course, what they do on top of that is they land generational quarterbacks.
Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence, and even this DJ.
They ain't stopping anytime soon. And it started with Taj Boyd, right? Mm-hmm. So can De'Aaron King be the Taj Boyd? We'll see, you know? But yes, I wonder too, like the name, image, and likeness stuff that's coming.
Right.
I think that helps a program like Miami, to be honest.
You'd hope so, but I think we need to see how a lot of these local companies are doing coming out of out of this COVID pandemic, how many people they've had to lay off, et cetera. But yeah, I think if Miami can get somebody to help pay De'Aaron King to be their pitch man, as much as he would get playing on a practice squad or, you know, minimum in the NFL, then he stays, I think, for another year. But it's like all of this stuff is just so dependent on one move or another. And I guess I was kind of hoping that Miami wouldn't even need to worry about this situation with De'Aaron King, because there would be another quarterback who saw what De'Aaron King accomplished this year in this offense and said, you know what, I want to be a part of that. And that would take some of this anxiousness over what De'Aaron does away. But I guess it's just the way it is in college football now, especially with the transfer portal opening up and so many guys expecting to move. And, you know, it's one of those situations where maybe it's just the way it is. You kind of have to live and die year to year with what happens at the quarterback position.
That's fair. It might turn in college football might turn into that, right? With the transfer portal, it might turn into like pro sports in some ways, you know, where guys, you know, move around all the time. So, I mean, I think you're spot on with, Gotta find quarterbacks. And honestly, too, like Jake Garcia, if they land him, I would not expect him to be Miami's starting quarterback against Alabama. I think they – and De'Aaron King leaves, I think they still need to go get a transfer. So
That Willis kid that Andrew mentioned might be –
Well, I think there's going to be more. Like, yes, there's not a ton of transfer quarterbacks yet, but there's going to be – it's going to be – I think it's going to be chaos. I think it's going to be craziness, the transfer portal this year.
That's what I'm fully expecting.
Yeah. So Miami's going to be in a position. And look, De'Aaron King's success helps – you know, if De'Aaron leaves, it would help Miami sell itself as a program that's friendly to transfer quarterbacks. Rhett Lashley, you know, besides De'Aaron King, he helped with Shane Bichelle at SMU, so he has a track record as well working with transfer quarterbacks. So I think Miami's still an attractive spot for those guys if they have to turn to it.
Yeah. David, it was a fun discussion, man, going over all this stuff with you, and I really appreciate all the time you gave me. And make sure now you're not officially on Twitter with your own personal account, are you?
I mean, I have one, I just don't use it.
Right.
Follow me on InsideTheU.com. You know, I'm on there. I'm on the boards, and you know, we have a fun time over there. So, but yeah, thank you for having me on. It was a fun conversation, man.
Yeah. Who knew we could talk about Hurricanes football for an hour on a bye week with another bye week coming up, but we did it. Somehow we pulled it off.
I'm here for it.
Thank you so much, man. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, Manny. Take care, man.
305-954-568. This is the state of Miami. Y'all know y'all come down that way.